says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hey, 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 welcome to Self-Reliance Exposed, brought to you by Backwoods Home Magazine. And this is Bubba Da Vinci, and with me, like every Saturday, is Colorado Ron. Hey, Colorado.
How's it going, buddy?
Oh, dude, you know, we are 10 days from Christmas, and, you know, here we are doing a radio show.
I know. You got your shopping done?
No, you know something? Haven't even started.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I mean, it's not as bad for me as it is for you. I mean, you have to shop for a household of seven.
Yeah, that's true.
With me, it's not that difficult, but, you know. Santa's been taking a break up to this point, so I'm going to be one of those idiots that everybody always talks about every single year that's out at 7:45 on Christmas Eve, you know, trying to get all the last-minute things you should have gotten done 6 months earlier.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I usually wait till the last minute, too, but this year I just, for some reason, we just got online, just knocked it all out. Me and my wife we had our list, and we said, let's just do it, boom, and let's get it done. And so we did.
Well, good for you. I mean, I'm usually very good at things like this, and this hasn't happened before. But this year, it just seems like everything has completely snuck up on me.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's out of control.
It happens. It definitely happens.
So, you know, we basically have this episode left. And then after this, it's one more, and then we're done for the year. And isn't that amazing?
I know. It's amazing that we've gone a year.
I know. And people are still listening. That's the biggest thing. The numbers keep going up, but you know, quite frankly, I just think that the people, it's like the same 10 people that just keep listening over and over and over again, so the numbers increase. I don't know.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know. I have no idea. Why are you guys listening to us?
Yeah, no kidding. So I think what's going to happen is I don't know who's going to be on the episode next week because we haven't talked with Dave Duffy and the people from Backwoods Home. But we have some pretty exciting guests this week.
Yeah.
We have a young gentleman by the name of James Cash. And no relation to Johnny. Just kidding. And this young man is 16 years old, and we'll be calling him today, and he wrote an article for Backwoods Home Magazine. If you guys haven't gotten your current issue, the current issue 139 is out, which is the January-February issue. And do you have the name of the article in front of you? I'll let you say it if you do.
I do, but I don't have it open. Hold on a second.
Okay.
No.
It's the funniest name.
James Cash here. Broody. I forgot. Broody Biddies make sense on the homestead.
Broody Biddies make sense on the homestead. It just cracked me up when I read the name. Yeah, it sounds like something a 16-year-old would come up with. So, yeah, we're going to spend about 45 minutes with James and kind of get to know him a little bit. I mean, he's definitely an up-and-comer. And then, we have an old friend that's going to be back on. It's someone that I like to say that we helped discover. And that is Jerry McFarlane. And she is the founder, creator, owner, extraordinaire of Jarbox. And I know you're a big advocate of Jarboxes, Colorado.
Love Jarboxes. I have them in almost all my food storages, Jarboxes.
Yeah. So, and I think that'll be fun to talk to her about that today also because, you did the article, we talked about it last week, you did the article and that it was in the New York Times, and you had that stuff all over the place.
Yes, I made sure Jarbox was everywhere.
Yeah, that's good. That was definitely good for her. She's such a sweetie, and so we'll talk with Jerry at the end of towards the end of the show. And, other than that, I think that's pretty much the show for the day. I think, our interviews are getting longer. Either we're getting it better at it or we're getting better people. I mean, either that or I'm still so afraid of Dave, and I'm going to mess things up with with his company's name on it that, who knows. Who knows? I'm still shunned from last week with Dave Duffy, so.
Oh, Dave's nice. We got to take him up on that fishing offer, though.
I know. We definitely do. So, all right, we got short amount of time to get things done today, but we've missed it for the past 2 weeks. So let's do one of your homestead hunters.
Oh, yeah, homestead hunter. This week I found one. I sent you the link. Did you get it?
I did this time.
Okay, so this one is a good one. I like. It's kind of simple, modest home, nothing fancy. Again, if you guys are not familiar with Homestead Hunter, basically it has to be at least, what was the requirement? At least 3 acres. Has to be under $150,000. Has to be a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and semi close to utilities, and can't be out in the middle of nowhere. People might have to fly out or things like that. So it has to be fairly close to an airport, things like that. So this one I found is in Sheldon, Missouri. It's listed at 145. What I like about this home, and for you guys that don't have the link. All you have to do is, what we should do is we should probably start putting these in the description. I don't know if you can do that or not.
Well,
but,
we can't, in
the show notes. But for now, go to facebook.com/ColoradoRon Page. Make sure you add Page at the end, Colorado Ron Page. And that'll take you to my Facebook page. And on there every week I post up the links. So if you're interested in this house, go there and you'll be able to see the pictures and stuff like that. So this home, what I like about this one is it sits on 40 acres. It's not, some of the ones we've been looking at are, 2, 3, 4, 5 acres. This one is a 40-acre parcel. It has a huge shop on it. It's got 2 ponds on the property. I really like this home. It's 3-bedroom, 2-bath. It's not a terribly huge home, it doesn't look like, but with 40 acres, you definitely got the room you need.
Yeah, this is a good-looking place.
It is a pretty home.
Yeah, I mean, I like the marble bathroom sinks, it's a good-looking house.
This one's listed at 145, so it's just under the wire for the 150 range. I like the home. I like the setup. And the location is fairly decent. It's not way out in the middle of nowhere. But now, if you look at the, did you look at the overhead view?
I did.
Look at all that stuff that's there. Crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do all those outbuildings come with the place?
According to this, now this could be wrong, but that does kind of, well.
No, see, because the description,
that's not the right one.
Yeah, it says it comes with a 3-bay carport on one side, septic goes out with a 1,500-gallon tank. You would think that they would mention in here that it has this has a giant outbuilding, so I don't see the garage and anything on this one. But I see here it's like a massive barn, barn.
It does have the 3-car garage on one side, and it's got this huge barn on the other. I see it. If you scroll through the pictures there, you'll see the 3-car barn stall.
Yeah, I see the 3-barn stall, but that's the only building. Because I think the other pictures that show on there, there's a garage at the front of the 3-car stall. So that's what that, there's one there, there's a picture there that shows like looking like a big garage door, so it looks like a barn. But if you look at the side profile, it's like one of mine, you've got 3 open bays, which are for tractors or whatever, and then you have the garage that's at the end.
Yep. Yeah, so that one is, but it's still pretty doggone nice. With 40 acres, you've got plenty of room to do the stuff that you want. And that big shop, I mean, man, you could do a lot there. I'm going to zoom out on the map here real quick because I cannot remember. But I don't think this one was very far from civilization, so to speak. It's really not too far out. You're looking at probably, I'd say a decent 45 minutes to Kansas City Overland Park area.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, guys, this isn't, I mean, price-wise, this isn't necessarily the cheapest that we've ever found in South Dakota. Bargain, but it's a good deal. I mean, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, 40 acres, nice outbuilding, you know, in a decent area, hardwoods around it, things like that. I'd say this is a good find.
Yeah, no, I like this one. And like I said, I mean, not everybody, Missouri is not for everybody. This is just on the border. It looks like Fort Scott is not very far away. And if you guys remember, one of our very first homestead hunters was Fort Scott, where I had found that humongous school building for sale for $50,000. I don't know if you remember that one, but that was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I remember. All right, guys. Well, this is a good find. So go to Colorado Ron's page and you can check out the link. And you know, one of these days, I hope someone sends us an email and said, "Hey, I went and looked at that property and I bought it."
I can't wait. Hopefully, somebody does eventually.
Yeah, that'll be really cool. All right. Well, you know, something we need to get to this first commercial break, courtesy of the Self-Reliance Expo. And when we come back from that break, we need to jump on there and give a call to James Cash, because he's 16 and he's got school stuff he has to do, so he gave us a pretty tight timeline to give him a call.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, so guys, right after the commercial break, we'll be back with you, and we'll be calling James Cash, the author of the current article in Beckwithsville Magazine, "Broody Biddies Make Sense on the Homestead." I can't believe that name. All right, guys, we'll talk to you in a few.
If everything you eat comes out of boxes stored in your freezer, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo. If you're afraid to take out your own garbage because the neighbor kids might beat you up, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
Over 50 training classes are coming to the Self-Reliance Expo. This family-friendly event focuses on traditional values and long-forgotten skills. Gardening, alternative home building, off-grid living, food preservation, cooking with the sun, self-defense classes, canine demos, and more.
If you can kill a houseplant just by looking at it, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
The Self-Reliance Expo is fun for the whole family and is the largest of its kind in the nation. Learn how to do it yourself. Learn how to defend yourself. Save money. Save a life.
If the only screwdriver you own is made of orange juice and vodka, you might need the Self-Reliance Expo.
It's the Self-Reliance Expo, coming soon. Find out more by going to SelfRelianceExpo.com. That's SelfRelianceExpo.com.
All right, you're back with Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Anna and Bubba Da Vinci. Are you ready to give James a call here, Colorado?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm very interested in talking to this young man.
I can't believe that we're actually calling a 16-year-old young man to do an interview with.
Yeah, let's give it a shot.
All right, so let me go ahead, and hopefully this won't take as long as the one with Dave Duffy for me to connect to. You know, no matter how many times I do this, every single time there seems to be an issue. All right, so it looks like it's getting ready to ring. Da, da, da. I can't wait till we listen to Real Men's of Genius today.
Yeah, I can't wait. That's going to be funny.
Hello?
Hi, James. This is Bubba Da Vinci in Colorado Ron with Self-Reliance Exposed. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you all doing?
We're doing fine, thank you. So where about are you guys at? You guys are someplace in the south, right?
Yes, southeastern Kentucky, actually. We're in the Eastern Standard Time, and we're about, if Louisville, we're about 2 hours from Louisville, southeast.
Oh, okay.
That's where the Kentucky Derby is at.
Yeah, we definitely – we've gone through Louisville. We like – Colorado Ron and I love to travel, so we've driven through there.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. We were kind of surprised when we found out Jeff from Backwoods Home sent us your information about you had an article coming up in this month's magazine, and they sent us all this information, and then – like 5 days later, we get this message saying he's 16, and we're like, "What?"
Well, I'm all about doing DIY stuff because I mean, I think providing for yourself is a good skill to have, and I really got interested in it when I was about 10, and I was with my grandmother. She was canning, and I was like, I just thought it was so neat that you could put food back and. You could save it and then do it all at home, and you wouldn't have nobody else had to help you. You could just do it yourself. And I've always liked that. I've got my chickens, my ducks, my geese. I've got meat rabbits. I had a milk cow for 12 hours of my life this year. I also had some goats, and we all raised the garden together. And we were canning together. We're doing all kinds of things like that. And I go to a county school here, and I'm involved with our FFA chapter. I'm the president of it and the vice president of our region there. And, you know, I really try and, you know, do things for myself. I don't like – it hurts me to buy things that we could make at home in the store.
Well, I'm kind of speechless. I've never heard a 16-year-old make those sorts of comments. I'm kind of intimidated now.
Well, I get that a lot, too.
I'm president of this and vice president of that, and I feel embarrassed that I actually buy 70% of my stuff still from the store. So, well, so tell us a little bit about, before you tell us about what the article is about, you know, have you been a longtime reader of Backwoods Home Magazine?
Well, I got started subscribing 2 years ago, and then before I started subscribing to it, I was on their web page a lot. I go through all the archives, and I read through Jackie Clay's blog, and I like going through her archives on there too. They were always neat, and I always found something useful on there, especially in her archives, and then in the issues archives. And that's really where I got my start back with home. And then it was Christmas time, and my dad was. He was wondering what things he could get me. I was like, I want a subscription to Backwoods Home Magazine. And he got me that. He got me a 2-year subscription, and then it was one with one of the anthologies with it.
Wow. So can I put you on the phone with my daughters tomorrow? And because the thing, I don't think any of them would ever ask for a subscription to Backwoods Home Magazine. Their list is a lot more terrestrial than that.
Yeah, I get that a lot, too. And last year, you know what I won for my 16th birthday?
What was that?
It was a Jersey calf. And I had it for 12 hours this year. I got it in March, and something happened to it, and it died. But that was my birthday present this year. I didn't want a car. I didn't want an iPhone. I didn't want an iPad. I wanted a dairy calf.
Wow.
So we went
That's
to the
impressive.
Local dairy and got one.
Wow, that's impressive. So you're into, it looks like, all kinds of homesteading type topics here in animals. I mean, you got, was it Delaware chickens, Muscovy ducks, you got geese?
Yes. I had some turkeys this year, too, and I've got multiple types of chickens, not just the Delaware chickens, but I've got Oxford Orps and Beth Orpingtons, and last Christmas, I got an incubator, and I did my first hatch. I set them on 25th, and I didn't really understand the whole incubation process then, so I put 12 in, and then when hatch day came around, only one hatched, and it was a girl, and I'd never had a pet chicken before in my life because I didn't really believe in food for pets, so I was like... You know, she was all by herself, and I fixed her up in a cage in my room because I didn't want her around the garage and be alone and nobody there with it. So she became my pet chicken, and her name is Who Dat. Why? I named her Who Dat. I'm not really sure, but she looked like Who Dat.
So you've been doing this for quite a while there. You know, what are the benefits? You know, like for instance, I have a friend that was telling me he likes ducks better than chickens, and he says the eggs are bigger and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit of the difference as far as raising them for eggs?
Well, I've had Muscovy ducks, and they're not really the egg-laying type, but I froze eggs off of them before and used them to bake with, because I tried some scrambled, and I was like, that's kind of gross. I really didn't like that. Now, I know some people do like that, but it was a little rich for me. But I prefer the chicken, raising chickens for eggs over ducks for eggs, because they're not as messy. But ducks are also better, they're better foragers and things like that, so they make up more on the cost-effective side.
Okay. All right. So, what do you mostly use the ducks for? Just meat?
They sell pretty good too. So, I just got a pair. I haven't got too many. I just got one drake and one duck, and I've had them for 3 years. I've had them for 3 years. They still lay just as good as they did when we got them.
Nice. Nice. What's one of your favorite animals?
Well, I have Who Dat. She's my favorite chicken. But I also have my first rabbit. And the rabbits started out as a pet, but they sort of evolved into, you know, meat rabbits. And my next goal with the rabbits is to learn how to tan hides. But my first rabbit, her name, I named her Deb. Why I named a rabbit named Deb, I'm not entirely sure. She is like, she's just Deb. She's just a good rabbit. She's like a really good pet rabbit and just very calm. Then I've got a cross-eyed cat named Roger. And Roger is he is the king. Roger, me and Roger have a special bond because he rides on my shoulders when I go out and feed. So he's real... He's a special cat.
Now, what is your, James, you decided to, did you submit multiple articles to Backwoods Home, or did you just pick a certain topic and submit it?
I just picked the topic, and I found pictures for it on my camera card, and I made an outline, and I just wrote it, and then edited through it, and sends in to the office in Gold Beach.
Now, can you tell, what was the name of the article and what's the article about? Now, this, for people who don't know, that this is the January-February issue, which should be hitting newsstands now. So.
It's called Broody Bitties Make Sense on the Homestead. And it's about raising, it talks about using broody birds, broody ducks, broody chickens. I touch on geese and turkeys some in it. It tells you how to move them, what breed this trait comes up in the most common, and how to keep them all safe, how to feed them. I've got some common concerns as well on there too, that sometimes people worry about using hens to sit with, and I've addressed that in there as well.
Now, so for the audience that doesn't raise chickens and doesn't know what it means, what is a broody hen?
It's a chicken or a duck or a turkey or goose that has the inclination to sit on eggs and stay full term with them, hatch them, and then raise them. They usually raise them anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. It just depends on your species.
And so this, are you, in this article, are you concentrating more on broody chickens, finding broody chickens because you want to hatch out the eggs, or are you talking about the issue with broody chickens that want to sit on them although there's not a rooster in the house and these are supposed to be egg laying hens?
Well, my article addresses making them useful. I mean, utilizing them for egg production. Because, you know, really, if you think about it, broody hens make egg production go up in the long term. And they also provide, you know, your excess roosters, which you can, freeze, whatever you want to do with. And then you have, but they're more, they're cost effective. You don't have to worry about them. I'm a big proponent of broody birds because I try and cull through that in my flock. And if I usually focus, if this bird, you know, whatever breed it is, if it's known to set a clutch or it's shown the desire to, I usually will keep eggs out of it to hatch in my incubator, so maybe I can propagate the trait through the next generation.
So the broody trait will actually carry from generation to generation?
It seems to be that way because your industrial breeds like the white leghorn, they do not have that trait anymore. Now, from best I can understand, even 100 years ago, they didn't have that trait as strong. But because, you know, industrial agriculture has bred that trait out of them, it's very, very, I mean, if you get a broody leghorn, it's very rare.
Very interesting.
But, you know,
I did not know that.
Certain breeds, like your Buff Orpington, which they are dual-purpose breed. And they seem to have the trait more than any of the other dual-purpose breeds. But you also have breeds like Cochins and Silkies and, you know, your game-type chickens that they exhibit this breed, but they're not – they don't excel in meat production or egg production, but they tend to be more broody. And they've not been touched by industrial agriculture, so they don't really – it's not been bred out of them.
Right. I mean, Silkies, those are just considered fancies. They're really not – they're not useful for anything but other than just sitting around looking pretty.
Exactly. And that's why that in my article I've got two lists of breeds for broodies, and one of which is ones that are more suitable for homestead life, which would be, you know, Buff Orpingtons, New Hampshire Reds, Black Osterlorps, Delawares. And, you know, sometimes you'll have Plymouth Rocks go broody, but that's pretty much – those are the breeds that have good egg production and good meat production, and they also have a tendency to brood. Because it broodiness doesn't always occur, and it does not occur in every breed. It may occur once or twice in an individual, but it doesn't speak for – it's not a well-recognized characteristic in some breeds.
Now – is there a percentage of their life expectancy that a broody chicken will remain broody? If they have that broody trait within them, are they broody through their entire lifespan?
No, best I understand, it's brought on by hormonal fluctuation in their bodies. But now that hormone is not always as present in some as others. Now, usually, from best that I can understand, my birds, their first year, you very seldom have broody hens. But now that for some reason, after the end of the first year and the second year, is when they start their second year of laying, broodiness is more dominant. Not every bird will go broody, but when you have a large flock, and each of them, you have different breeds and you have different numbers of each breed, it does seem to manifest more into a certain breed.
Now, and then you said you have, what's in the second list? You said you had two lists.
The second one is the broodiest chickens, that would be the Silkies, the Cochins, and the game-type chickens that are not suitable, at least in my opinion, for a homestead life.
Okay.
You know, they're not as good egg layers, and they're not as good meat producers, but they brood more than even your old reliable dual-purpose breeds.
Okay, so does the same thing hold true across species? So, you know, we're just talking about chickens. You know, can you follow the same philosophy with turkeys or any other fowl species that, you know,
Well, turkeys and geese, pretty much, regardless of variety or breed, they will brood because they're not as involved in industrial agriculture as chickens are. Turkeys, usually, no matter what the variety, unless they're a broad broad-breasted variety, like your broad-breasted bronze or your broad-breasted white ones. Those cannot even mate on their own. So I don't even know if they will go breeding, but your heritage varieties, like your bourbon red, your standard bronze, royal palm, and there are several others like that. Now, they usually do go broody in the spring. Most hens will. And that's a much larger percentage than the chickens is.
Now,
and then
go ahead.
Geese, they mate in the spring, and then the goose works on a nest. And they build that nest up, and the goose and the gander will guard the nest, and she will raise only one. But it's all usually in the spring, early April into May.
Seems like a lot of work for that for geese.
Geese are they're more contrary to deal with, but geese are very self sufficient though. They require very little feed. I mean, they're more about eating grass and legumes rather than you know a bag of feed per se.
And I mean, it seems like geese are pretty decent at defending themselves. Where chicken and turkeys, their natural instinct is just to run. Geese will actually stand something off.
Yes, that's why I like geese is because they seem to be most capable of, you know, doing their own. They're the most capable of doing their own thing. They feed very easily. They will raise young, and it's 8 times out of 10 successful. And then you also have they don't let anything bother them. Cats, stray dogs, they've had to lick if the geese get after them, because the geese are big. They're big animals.
Mm-hmm. Now
they're loud too, and that also scares them.
Don't know what that was. Do you breed all your animals in one area? Do you have them in different environments?
All mine free range together. I have 2 coops. I have a mixed breed flock. I am trying to build up more Delawares in my flock. And I have a Delaware dominant flock so that I can withdraw them out of the main environment to get eggs to hatch off of and sell the babies and sell hatching eggs as well. But I do have a mixed flock. I've got the ducks and the geese and all the chickens. They run together. I let them out at around 7 o'clock every morning, and they go up around, well, right now because of the, we're in the wintertime, they go up at around 5:30 at night.
Well, now I have a question if we can go back to the rabbits. What breed of rabbits do you raise again?
I started out with French Lops, and that's what my pet rabbit Deb is. She's a French Lop, and I started out with them, and I've only got two French Lop does left. I started mixing them up with another breed. I'm not entirely sure what it was though. It's a meat breed though, and I started just making hybrid rabbits, because to me, for the meat rabbits, I'm looking for more efficiency than looks.
Yeah, we've done Californians and New Zealands here, honestly, I haven't had much luck breeding them, so I'm gonna attempt it here again. How many rabbits do you have?
Right now, I think I've got around 10. I had that same problem with the French Lops. I could not get them to take. And what I noticed is that I was probably feeding them too much pellets. So I took pellets from them and put them on hay and less pellets, started rationing their pellets out more. And then the next breeding cycle, I didn't notice the difference. Now, and then after that, I had another. The French Lops, I really would not recommend as somebody to start out with for a meat rabbit. They seem to be harder to breed, and it's just what I started out with, but I'm changing it up, and I've hybridized their offspring, and they seem to work really good.
Okay. Maybe I should do that, Dan, take away some of their pellets, because we're giving them quite a bit of pellets right now. So.
Well, what I did is we went to Sam's Club, and this was before I started canning meat, and they had that canned chicken. And I just started, I saved those cans out of it and just started, it's 13 and a half ounces worth. And that's what, for large breeds like what the French Lops were, that's what they recommended. And I bet I was giving them at least probably over a third more than what they were supposed to have. And they were really, it was really starting to show on them too. Because even though that's a small amount of feed, you know, it's a small animal too, and it impacts them differently. Because it's all proportion based.
Oh man, I didn't even think about that. You know, we just have the auto feeder, and you know, I just fill it up, top it off, and keep them topped off. I don't even measure how much they're eating.
For the chickens, that seems to work best for them, especially when they don't have good pasture and range out like they do right now. I've got around 4 acres for them all to range in during the summer, and it's different environments. They've got two orchards to run through, and they've also got a wooded area to go through. So each pasture changes throughout the season, and feed is the bag feed that I feed. The proportion changes on it too. So right now they're on a auto feeder.
Okay, interesting. All right. Well, you said you had about 10 rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Are you using a lot of them for meat?
These right now are mainly what I have now is breeding rabbits. They're just we're just breeding them right now. I've got two of them that have litters right now, and I think they've got around one of them has three, and it's her second litter, so she's not had as many yet. And then the other one, she had around five, I think.
Okay.
And we're raising them for meat right now. And then I've got two more that are pregnant and will be due right after Christmas.
You know, you don't free range them, obviously, right?
No, they're in hutches. I'd like to set up a colony system for them, but right now I don't really have the best place in mind for it yet. But that's one of my goals, is to set the meat rabbits up in a colony system.
Now, I have a question. It used to be that to test to see if you were pregnant, you used to test on rabbits. How do you test to see if the rabbit's pregnant?
Well, there is a method to do it, and I've never tried it myself.
Do you have to get one of the girls at school and you test it on them and see if the rabbit's pregnant? No? Okay. Now, is there a way? I mean, you said that you had some that are pregnant now. How do you know? Is they act differently? Do they?
Well, when I breed my rabbits, I always make sure that that the deed is done. After that, I leave them be for overnight, and then I'll take them out the next morning. And after that, usually 2 weeks after that, they're definitely more needy. They seem to need more hay. They need more feed. They need more resources.
So it's like my wife.
Impressive with you too.
I wasn't going to comment about Heather, but I know when my wife got pregnant, how I knew is she definitely got more needy.
And I'm walking on eggshells over here. There's no way I'm saying anything like that.
that was perfect, James. It's like there was a lot of women out there that were kind of going, I wonder what he's talking about. Like, they get more needy. All right. That's classic. So let me ask you a question. I mean, you're 16 years old. You're naming off breeds just off the top of your head and everything else. When did you really, when did this become a major thing for you? Because James, you seem incredibly knowledgeable. I mean, Colorado and I run these expos and we do this show, and I have chickens and everything else. I couldn't even tell you half the breeds that are in my coop. They got feathers, and they cluck, and they lay eggs. That's about what I know of my chickens.
I started to pay more attention to the homesteading around 6 years ago. And
so 10 years old.
Raise the garden. What now?
So 10 years old.
Around when I was 10 years old, that's when I I was starting to help Gran with her canning. And we all, I've been around livestock since I was a baby, and I've been around a garden since I was a baby. But, you know, you can have those things and not homestead at the same time. It's because homesteading's more of a, it's more of a mindset than it is anything. And then I just started paying more attention to it, and I got really interested in it. And then one spring, my mom wanted to get honeybees, so we got them that spring. And the following summer, we got chickens. That was 4 years ago.
Now, do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sister, yes.
Older or younger?
She is not like me. She is a basketball kind of girl.
Is she older or younger?
She's 13.
She's 13. So she doesn't look – so it's a younger sister. When she looks at you, does she kind of think you're a little bit crazy? It's like, you know, why are you out there playing with the chickens when you can be out doing, you know, doing this other stuff?
Yes, she looks at me like that constantly. But she also likes the eggs that she has for breakfast in the morning, too. And she liked the rabbit stew that we had for supper a couple of weeks ago.
There you go. So you said that you – that are, do you hunt? Do you do anything? I mean, you said you wanted to get into tanning, and I assume that's because of the rabbit pelts. Do you hunt or anything else to add to your homesteading?
Me and my dad, we started hunting this year. I didn't get anything this year. I was really disappointed. But our hunting season for gun season has already passed here. And I started hunting this year, and I plan to keep it up. I liked it. And, you know, really we weren't as good prepared as we should have been for it. But as we do more this year, we're going to try and get a tree stand fixed and a bunch of other things so that I can definitely bring home the DOE, D-O-E, this year.
DOE. when you say you're homesteading, how big of a property do you live on?
We don't have that much land here at home, probably 5 or 6 acres, but we have a big garden, 2 orchards, and I've got 3 hutches full of rabbits, and then the chickens and the ducks and the geese, and we've built a pantry this year. And, you know, really, I don't know if it's really the size of the land, but what you do with it.
Oh, so it can be said about a lot of things. So, you know, you're cracking me up, James. I mean, you've got the right attitude, because, you know, we do interviews and we always talk about how big is the piece of property and everything else. And the people who are like Jackie are all saying the same thing. You don't need to have a lot of property. It's making sure that you're utilizing, you know, the space that you have. But that's not what
property is nothing. I mean, there are people that are in suburbia and they're raising chickens. They're raising a good little portion of their food, and they have less than an acre, maybe even less than half of an acre.
Yeah, but unfortunately in America, that's not most people's mentality. Yeah, the first thing
that is not. Most people want things done for them.
Yeah, and I'm just talking about even the size of the property. You know, when somebody goes, when we talk to people, it's like, well, I'd like to get 150 acres. And my first thought is, what are you going to do with 150 acres? I mean, hell, I can't even maintain the property I have. And, you know, it's just, it's hard enough. I mean, go ahead.
I think, you know, people think of these big farmhouses and a huge barn and, you know, rolling acres of pasture, a pond, you know, those things are great. They really are. But to do it in a manageable way for most people, you know, most people work from, you know, 9 to 5, you know, a schedule like that. Most people cannot maintain a 150-acre farm the way it ought to be maintained, working those schedules.
Wow. I mean, I can't believe he's 16 years old. Can you, Colorado?
No, it's surprising. I mean, I have that insight now, but I sure as heck didn't have it at 16.
Heck, I don't even have it now. I'm taking notes. Oh, man. I I'm sorry, I interrupted your questions on the rabbits, Colorado. I was just kind of curious about his tanning, you know, if he was doing any kind of other hunting or anything like that.
Well, yeah, no, you're fine. I'm just trying to figure out my doggone rabbits here because, you know, I let them do the deed, and then I wait 30 days, then 40 days go by, and 50 days, and after 60 days, I'm pretty convinced that they didn't take, you know.
Well, it's Constellation, before Deb got retired, she would go 35 days sometimes, and it would have me just all over the place because, like, oh, she's not taken. Oh, no. And then it'd be 34 days, so nothing in there. And then 35 days, she'd have them, and they were half grown. So
it cracks me up. Not only does he name them, but he retires them after they've been worked too much.
I retire them when I actually called a big doe yesterday. Well, not yesterday, a couple of days ago. And she was the same. She was actually one of Deb's sisters, but I didn't have any compassion for her, and I got rid of her. But Deb is my pet. I only retire a pet. If you're retired here, you're usually in a jar.
Now, I almost had to retape this because I'm cracking up so much I can't get my questions out. Who does the, when you're talking about it, like when you dispatch the animals, who's doing the, who kills them, who skins them and guts them and prepares them and cans them? I mean, are you doing the whole process yourself? Is your mom involved? Is your dad involved? I mean, who's helping or who's in the process?
You know, it's usually a group effort. I mean, I'm the one that kills them and dresses them out. My mother, she usually gets them ready, unless you know, if I do a small batch, I usually will do it the whole thing myself because usually other people, they've got other things going on. And then sometimes, you know, when we do big batches, we all set up like a assembly line. We all do different things, get them ready, and get them done.
Now, what
I know how I can. I couldn't tell you how many things that I've canned that I never would have thought about canning, especially this year.
Can you give me an example?
Celery.
Canned celery?
Canned celery? That's it.
Yes.
Huh.
Because I was at home. We'd made chicken stock out of some roosters that we had killed, and I was thinking, well, what can I do with that? Because we don't, you know, eat celery raw normally. I don't really like raw celery. But I do like it. It's pretty nice in, you know, stews and sometimes casseroles are good with it too. And then I thought, what would Jackie Clay do? So I got her canning book out, and in there she had the instructions on how to can celery. So I did it, and it's sitting on the pantry, and it's one of the most useful things that we've done. It's definitely more useful than I ever thought about it being. I didn't want it to go bad in the refrigerator, so I canned it.
Wow. You know something? I'd love to get Jackie on next time we talk to James because, if I were Jackie Clay, having a 16-year-old go, I ask myself, what would Jackie do?
You know, most of my friends are like, they're Kobe Bryant this or LeBron James this, and I'm like Jackie Clay.
Oh my goodness!
Because I like reading her stuff. She's always got good stuff to read. Her art's always good. Her books are good.
How'd you like to meet her?
Oh, I would. I would love to meet Jackie Clay.
We might have to arrange that. I might have to go and find a way to arrange for you to come up here and meet her. She doesn't live but 4 hours from me, 5 hours from me, north.
Oh.
And Colorado Ron will tell you, she is the nicest woman.
Oh, yeah.
But I could just see these two cracking each other up all the time because she gets us laughing. I'd love to put them in a room together and just tape the damn thing. I think I'd be in stitches the entire time. That's awesome. So have you done any tanning? So, I mean, let me take a step back. So – do you use as almost all of what you do? So I mean, do you utilize the feathers and everything else, or for the most part, you raise them until you have a certain quantity, and then you kill them, can them, and then start your next batch? I mean, what's kind of take a few minutes and walk us through the process.
Well, with the chickens, the rabbits are still, they're still relatively new. We have, you know, slaughtered them before, but the chickens is definitely my most experienced path with the canning here. And what I do, I've got Cornish rock crosses right now, and I don't know if you all have ever raised any of them, but now I've done three batches, and I personally, I don't really like them. This will be my last batch here. But this, like I said, for Christmas this year, last year I got an incubator. And when you incubate, they're not all hens. You always have roosters in there too. And I sold the hens immediately. Once I could distinguish the sexes, I sold the hens, kept the roosters. I let them free range until they were 12 weeks old, and then I put them back in the coop, and I fed them I fed them 20% protein feed, and they got scraps the whole bit until they were all different ages. They were all ranged about 2 weeks apart in each age group. And I waited until the biggest ones, I could note tell there was a noticeable difference between each age group. You know, this group was definitely bigger than this past group. So I took maybe four at a time. I killed them. I skinned them. I don't pluck. I can them. So really, to my knowledge, you can't can the skin. And the feathers, they go out with the skin, too. I haven't figured out something to do with the feathers, but I'm working on that. So I got that done, and then I take them up to the kitchen. I wash them. I get my jars ready. Put the chicken. I hot pack my meat, boiled the chicken, then I deboned it, packed it into the jars, put the hot broth over it, a little salt. I didn't overdo it because I don't like salty chicken. Then you'll put the lids on, put them in the canner, and wait it to start exhausting, and then 90 minutes later, they were done. And usually that takes a day with just me doing it. Now, if my mother and we're all done working it together, I can have two batches done that day. So.
Wow, I'm tired just listening to it.
I usually save the bones while I'm canning the meat. I keep all the bones, simmer them until after that first batch of chicken's done. I season them with onion, minced onion. I sort of make a quick stock. It's sort of broth, but it's, because stock and broth are different, but I put onion, minced onions, salt, and pepper. And, you know, with stock, you put onion skin, celery. Sometimes I think I put carrots in there too, but for the quick stock, I make that. I pack it into my jars and then can it like that.
Damn, Colorado. I didn't even know there was a difference between broth and stock.
There is. It's really, I didn't know there was either until I started making it.
Jeez.
You better catch up.
I'm telling you. I mean, the problem is it's 16 years old. By the time he gets to my age, you know, I'll have to be like 150 before I'll get this much knowledge. James, I have to say, I'm very impressed. I wasn't sure what to expect by the conversation, but I have to say, you may be one of our more knowledgeable guests that we've had on the show. We've had some pretty decent experts on here.
That's a big honor for me.
Wow. I'm at a loss. I mean, now I want to go back and smack my kids upside the head and say, you got a lot of catching up to do.
Well, you know, I know this is not what most kids do. I'm pretty sure that like, you know what they put on lifestyle cans, like 99.99%. I would be willing to bet that would be most kids. Most kids would not be like that.
No.
Be like me. And I like being me.
Well, good for you. Hey, well, unfortunately, we've got to wrap this up. Would you be? I'd love to have you back on the show again. I think you have a lot of knowledge, and there's a lot of area to potentially explore here. Would you be interested in coming back on the show in a couple weeks?
Oh, most definitely, most definitely.
All right. Did you have any other questions, Colorado, before we go? Colorado.
No. I think we should hit him up on gardening next time.
I think we can send you an email and give you a list of questions that we want to have that I obviously will have no knowledge about, and you can teach me. And I can deal even further and, you know, yeah, embarrassed.
Oh, I'm good with the gardening too.
I started
a seed bank this year, so I'm pretty good on that stuff too.
And you know, what I want to do is get my magazine before we talk to you next time, because I want to read your article, so that way we can have a conversation. When's your book coming out? I mean, the way you're going, I got to figure, you know, Colorado Ron's been working on his and he still can't get it done. So I figure, you know, you'll probably have a book out before he does. So,
a book
is on my to-do list in the long term, but I got to get, you know, stuff done for that.
That's right. Take your time.
Yeah.
I do plan on writing some more articles though, and submitting them to the Stack It Backwards Home, and hopefully they'll deem them good, and they will say, we want them in the magazine.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm definitely looking forward to reading this issue and finding out what you got in there. And I'll tell you, I also learned a lot today. You're a very intelligent young man, and it was a very enjoyable conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
All right. So we've been speaking to James Cash, who is the author of give us the name of the title again. It was something funny with the Broody Chickens.
Broody Biddies Make Sense on the Homestead.
See, I wanted you to say that because if I said biddies in that context, somebody would be writing me a letter. So, all right. Thank you very much, James. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is J. Stephen Stoller for Backwoods Home Magazine. If you like the program you're listening to right now, consider subscribing to Backwoods Home Magazine. Call 1-800-835-2418 or go to www.backwoodshome.com and click on the subscribe button. Every issue of Backwoods Home Magazine is over 100 pages, packed with solid self-reliance advice by experts who tell you how to survive in these unpredictable times. Call 1-800-835-2418.
All right. Welcome back to Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci, brought to you by Backwoods Home Magazine. All right, Colorado, you ready for the second half of this?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm excited.
Yeah, so am I. You know, I'm still, you know, I have to say, talking to James, you know, I was thinking about it over the break, and, you know, just, I've got to figure out a way over the next couple of weeks that we get a show together with Jackie Clay and call James and get him online with Jackie.
I agree. That kid is really sharp, I'm excited to see how far he takes this.
Yeah, I think that he's got a ton of potential, and I agree. Who knows where he'll go with it, but I think he's going to go far. So right now we're going to be calling Jerry, and I think it's McFarlane. And she, if you guys remember, we talked to her, God, has it almost been a year? It's been a while.
Yeah, I guess it has. It was right before our Colorado Springs Expo. So.
Yeah. So, you know, she is the creator of Jarbox. And, you know, she did this with her family. Jarbox is a product that you use to store your canning jars full or empty so that they don't break. I mean, I can't think of a better way. It's a stackable product, kind of like putting an egg carton around eggs.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And what's nice about them, I've been using them in my food storage, and actually it saved us a lot of time taking them out of the basement for the photo shoot for New York Times. And so I actually got them in that photo shoot.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I remember seeing the whole photo shoot with all the jar boxes laid out there.
Yep, I got them in there. So I was pretty stoked about that.
All right. Well, let's give her and she did phenomenally at both of our expos. I believe she was in her first event was Colorado Springs, and then she also went to our Arlington event. And yes, I think both of them did very well by her.
Yeah, they sold out on both.
Yeah. All right. Let's attempt to give Jerry a call. Like I said, attempt because, you know, as we all know here, this is Bubba Da Vinci trying to operate a technical device. All right. So here we go. Hey, that was quick. I like that.
Hi, this is Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. You got Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron here. How are you today?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. How are you?
All right. We were just talking about, you know, it's almost been a year. I mean, it was the first time we talked to you.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, well, we were just thinking about it. It was about a month or so before our Colorado Springs event.
Right, which was awesome, by the way.
No, thank you.
Oh, thanks.
So, you know, I think we talked to you in, probably in March. So, I mean, it's not quite a year, because, I mean, it's been a very fast and busy year, hasn't it?
It really has. It really, really has a lot going on in the Jarbox corporate office upstairs in my house.
Well, okay, let's start with that. So for the people who didn't listen to our May 5th, I believe, interview with you here on Self-Reliance Exposed, explain to people what Jarbox is and how you came up with it.
Okay. Jarbox, the way I came up with it was just frustration after years and years of trying to store my jars. I can, and we have food storage and so on and so forth, and cardboard was really the only option we had. So it's frail, and it falls apart, and mice eat it, and bugs get in it, and you can't stack it. But that's all we've ever had. So I think we kind of put up with it, and finally I had one final straw breaking episode, and I won't tell the whole story because I know that could go on and on, but I lost another set of jars, and there was a family of mice that had been living in there, and I was standing out in my front yard with jars broken all over the place and, you know, mice running off, and my dogs caught the mice and killed them and brought them back to me as a present, and it was just, I just had had it. So I told my husband, I said, you know, I really have to find some way to correct this, or it's just not worth it. We move a lot, and we travel, and we hunt, and we camp, and so transporting and caring for the jars. And he says, oh, you should just find something, because really you don't need to quit canning now there, darling. You just keep that up. So long story short, I looked for something, and there are some tubs and things out there, but the jar-to-jar breakage was really a problem too, especially just, you know, moving them around. And so it came down to one of those decisions, kind of going, well, what are we going to do? Well, I don't know. Well, let's make something. And that's really abbreviated. We worked with engineers, and, you know, it was really funny when I went in for the first meeting with them at the big corporate table, and they all looked at me with their eyebrows on the ceiling, and I says, gentlemen, I need a jar box. You know? And they're like, oh, what? So me being official and important didn't fly. But, oh, well, you guys know me by now, so it's probably no surprise.
That is awesome. That is awesome, though. Now, you've gotten these things pretty much everywhere now. I've started noticing them, you know, popping up on the internet and different ads here and there. And I'm starting to see these things floating around quite a bit.
Great. Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, I have my nose buried so much in trying to get ready for this next season coming up that I really rely on people, and it pumps up my day, you know, gives me like, hey, I saw your jar boxes, or I can't wait for this, or, you know, thanks for that. I hear stories. I have some wonderful people sharing the way that jar boxes have helped them and their families, and, I mean, it just makes it all worthwhile. So it's hard. You know, anyone that started a new business with a brand new product, just being, you know, little and trying to get the word out and hoping that you're doing a good job, and really there's no way to know. You know, unless people say, hey, I saw your jar boxes. I'm like, really? Where? Did you buy one? So.
Well, you know, we actually got to test these out pretty good a couple of weeks ago. We had a jar of canned peaches that took a tumble down one flight of stairs.
Oh, wow.
And it was in your jar box, and it managed. Luckily, it was carpeted stairs, so it kind of slid and fell and tumbled and slid some more. And anyway, the bottom line is, when it got to the bottom, there were not one breakage.
Oh, I am so glad to hear that. That is the, you know, you just lose so much when you lose that. Your time, your harvest, and some things that people have pointed out to me over the last few months as they use them as well, is that you're not, you know, if anything ever happened and for some reason we couldn't replace our jars, either for a short time or a long time, you've lost a way to preserve your food. And you've not just lost all your work and your preserves and everything else, but when that jar is gone, you know, cross it off till you could get another one maybe. And so those are some of the stories I've heard, and I just really appreciate you sharing that.
Oh yeah, we were really excited about it, and you know, so you know, the fact that we've actually converted all of our food storage, or almost all of it. I ended up I gave some away to the guys were so impressed. They were here for the I don't know if you knew this, but they were here taking pictures for New York Times, and they were so impressed with them that I gave some to the film staff, because they were like, I cannot believe that nothing broke in this. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. I was telling them all about it, explaining it to them. And I was like, here, take some. And so I took them back home to their wives to test out. But, yeah, so most of my stuff, though, is the jar boxes in the basement. And, you know, it makes it so much neater and so much more organized. I love it.
Yeah, you need to send her that photograph. We'll send you the link here afterwards. It's pretty amazing seeing this. They took the photograph almost like from an aerial photo, and it shows everything laid out. And there must be, I don't know, Colorado, what, about 20 or 30 rows or jar boxes out there?
Yeah, I would say that. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, I would say pretty close to that, about 20, yeah, 30. About 30 jar boxes I got in the front yard. You're in New York Times.
Yeah, in the New York Times, yeah, it was pretty close.
Okay, I'm humble. I feel very little right now.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah, you know something. I think I talked. This is not the first time we've heard I'm humbled from you, because I was thinking back, and I'm actually looking at the article that was in Backwoods Home Magazine in the November-December issue on page 66 and 67, and there's this great photograph of you at the at one of our shows, with you standing with Brad Stagg front that does Tattler Lids, and
right.
Jackie Clay. And I remember how giddy you were when you got to go over and meet Jackie, and she was sitting there talking about it, and she was just so thrilled with your product.
It's just those people are so kind-hearted and so down to earth and just amazing and talented, and you know, they're stars in my book, and here I am, you know, the jar box lady, hanging out with, you know, the big guys in my book that I just admire so much, and Brad's product is just so awesome. I do feel like that. It's you know, I don't know, Cinderella thing or something. You just feel like, here I am with all these people that are so important, and you can't help but feel like that, or I can't anyway.
Well, I brag all the time that when people see your jar box or someone says, oh, I love those jar boxes, I go, yeah, we helped find her.
Thank you. Yes, you did. I'll never forget that. I was just petrified. I'm like, oh, I'm there. Who? I'm what? Oh no, I can't do it. Yeah, you can. No, I can't. Yeah, you can. No, I can't. You have to do this. All right. You know, that's all me. Nobody else talking there. Just me.
No, it's been
amazing. More of that. You know, going into these corporate. I'm trying to get these out to people. You know. I want them on the ground. I want them on the internet. I want them available for people. And I've just kind of thrown myself out there in these corporate situations where here I come. You know, one fella commented, oh, you big executives, you know, you're probably flying all around and, you know, blah, 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 and thanks for getting back to me. And I says, yeah, the only thing flying around on me is my ponytail, basically. That's how big of an executive I am. So you walk in and you're talking with these people that, you know, can offer my friends, my customers out there, they can take this for you to the stores and get it out. There's no way I could ever do anything like that. And just it's an ominous feeling to be there with them and see that they like the product and know that they're serving their customers and that you're helping them to do that, and eventually the product helps them. I've just been blown away. I really have.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of work. I can't imagine all the time that you've put into this product.
It does take a lot of time. I really thoroughly enjoy the events. The only events I've been to so far are with you guys, and those have been fantastic. And next year I have coming up, in fact, January and February. January I'll be at Mid-States, which Mid-States is a member participant co-op where people like Big R and Murdoch's and your Farm and Ranch, they buy through there. It's part of their organization. So it's a huge opportunity to the rural communities and so if people now this will go to their distribution centers. So if people want to have jar boxes at their local, ranch and farm, whatever kind of store they have, if they ask for them, there's a chance that they might order them straight from the distribution centers. So it's been so much to learn and EDIs and ITF-14s and ASN, and I'm like, what? I'm not kidding. I'm setting up with True Value. We're actually in their event this year as well, and that's in February. And so we're going out there, and we just got all our testing done, and we're in production, quote-unquote, mode. So that means that, they'll be able to order through True Value, and I know that's a distribution that is nationwide and independent stores that are serving people and have canning supplies and have a lot of things that a lot of us need. So I'm looking forward to people being able to get them there as well. But I think they're going to kind of have to ask. That's the hard part, is I might get on my Facebook page and, say, hey, do you want jar boxes? I don't know how to do this. That's the part I'm like, jar boxes exist. How do you tell everybody that?
I know, it's getting the word out there. I mean, that's the hardest part. I mean, developing a cool product is one thing, and then it's a whole nother ball game to get that product out there. And it kills me every time I hear somebody say, oh, I've never heard of that, or what is that? You don't know yet.
I know, me too. I'm like, oh, no. But, then you start thinking, or I've been, online and everything, well, how do I, be bigger than life? How do I become more than just myself and spread the word? And happy customers are doing a really good job of that and telling others, and I just can't tell you how much I appreciate them. So I look at all the different options, and I learned that there's a difference between something being viral on the computer and a virus on the computer. Two different things. One is not good. I'm like, wait a second.
That one's very bad.
I know. I'm like, okay, no virus, yes viral. Now how do I do that? So I don't know. I thought, I'll get out in a boat in the middle of the pond in the rain and, put it on YouTube. Maybe that works. I don't know, man.
So have you, I noticed from the very first time that you had this product out till now, there's been a few changes. And then you've got some new things that are coming that you're working on as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I do. We've changed the material probably twice since the last time you and I have all talked. And the only thing that has been, as people give me feedback, I love the feedback because I can go, okay, some people were having a hard time with the latches were tight, and so we were able to tweak the material and the processing just a little bit to where they still snap. And you guys know this, you have jar boxes, and they still nest and they still do everything, but it's a little more, not so like, rah, you got to get a crowbar. So every time we hear back from people, we make small adjustments, but Jarbox, the court, has served people really well, and so far, I haven't heard a lot of, oh, gosh, if it only did this, which makes me feel good. I mean, I want to hear it, but if I heard it every day, I'd probably be like, oh, my goodness, what have I done? So we changed that a little bit. My number one request is the pint-sized jar box. And I probably even mentioned this several months ago because it's been that little star gleam in my eye of, you know, the thing I want to bring out so bad next. And, boy, I'll tell you, the processes that you learn in any new business, I suppose, are it just takes longer than you would ever imagine to get this. Like, oh, come on, pint mold, let's roll, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So, and then, you know, we have six packs coming and things like that, but that'll be down the line. If we can get these two, you know, main resources out for people, I'll feel really good about that.
Now, I know when we were talking to Brad, he said the most difficult thing that he encountered when he decided to relaunch his dad's product was knowing how fast and how big to gear up, because you know, if you go too heavy, then you could end up with a lot of product or a lull, and then you've got stuff sitting there and money out of your pocket. But if you go too light, then, you know, you don't have enough product to service everybody, and that's just as bad. How have you found dealing with that so far?
Well, a lot of lost sleep, because it is true. I mean, here I have a product that's never been introduced except for those last year and those few months that it's, you know, just coming out. And I intentionally didn't go out and, you know, try to get the huge accounts and get the stars in your eyes and everything, because I know better. You know, I've heard those kinds of stories. Well, then the companies start contacting you, and people, I just want to help them so much. And they say, well, I'd love to see it here and there. So I've kind of weighed it back and forth and tried to get the most coverage I can from the retailers that accepted the product. I have no way to know. And I'll tell you what, I asked Brad that question too. I'm like, Brad, how do you do this? You know, because our product, the jar box weighs 2.6 pounds, you know, when you have a top and a bottom put together as a piece. And so that's a lot of material. Mm-hmm. And I could put, well, as much money as I wanted to into inventory with that same question. Well, maybe the divisions of Kroger that purchase it, or Super Value, I mean, with some people that are really working with us to get it out, you know, maybe they order 10,000. Okay, well, maybe we should make 10,000 just to get ahead, because everybody's going to order all at once. And I'm like, no, I can't do that, because, number one, I can't afford to. That's a lot of money in inventory, like you were saying. And then, you know, I've got the pint mold that we're saving for and trying to get out there. And so we're sitting here. We don't have X because we have no history with the product, because it's brand new. And this will be the first time it's really going into that retail setting. We don't really have a Y because I don't know how much they're going to order. I don't. So I have no way to know how to plan for Z. And it's absolutely correct. It is the biggest question mark on the slate right now. The only thing we can do, we've decided this, I've talked with the manufacturer, Legacy Molding. My husband and I have gone through it a million times in our head. We've talked to a few people that have other businesses, and we can get into full production. We're ready for it. As soon as you get the PO in your hand, you know, a new company, you got to have that PO, the purchase order. Once you have that, then start running them. We may get on back order. I don't know. I mean, and some people say, oh, that's a good thing. And I'm nervous about it. I really am. I want to serve the retailers well. I want to serve the customers well. But you can't gamble the entire business, in my humble opinion, trying to build up what you anticipate someone might want to order in inventory. It's just really dangerous. And then you could go away. And I don't want to do that. So it's been really tough. That has been our number one thing as a new business, and I could definitely see it from bringing another, you know, like Brad's product back up to the forefront as well.
So, I mean, but, you know, it's good. I'm sure it's good. It's good for me to hear it, but I'm sure it's good for our listeners to hear, too, that you're dealing with these problems, because, you know, so often on TV and in magazines, they make it sound like these processes are so easy. And, you know, Brad was like, you know, it's really the difference that can make or break a company, and you really have to be methodical.
Yeah, you do. And I'm such a, you know, quote unquote people pleaser. I love to see people happy and served well and taken care of, and so, you know, it's tempting for me to want to do that, and my business logic has to go, Jerry, come on, you want to be around for people longer than, you know, one short season, and then all of a sudden, you know, something happened and you're under. Because I can't, it would be so difficult to try to recuperate from something like that. And I hope people, like you said, it's not all peaches and cream. It's very difficult, and you have to make decisions that go against your emotions and into logic and back and forth. You know, there's always that risk that you take in any new business, but you got to really try to forecast things that you don't have a lot of experience in, or maybe none. So it is hard,
yeah.
And I depend on the people's opinions that, you know, have been there, done that. I try to have their hindsight in my pocket because I don't have my own.
Well, now I have a question for you. The you know, we have a lot of people that call us that are either creating a product or thinking of creating a product for this industry, and are you know, possibly looking at, you know, attending the expo, maybe spreading the word about it and things like that. So we hear about all these neat products that might come out or possibly come out. You know, for some of these people that are where you were, say, 2 years ago, what is some of the advice now that you've traveled this road a little bit that you could give them?
I think probably number one, and I've been to you know, a few inventor meetings and things like that too, and there's so much innovation, which is so uplifting, but to really look at your product and make sure that you're willing to be not in love with it. I hate to say it that way, but if it is something that has a market, if it is something that can help a lot of people, if it can do those things that you see on, you know, Shark Tank or whatever, save people money, have a place in the market, something that's just not going to be a flash in the pan and really have some value to it, be open enough to make adjustments to it. Be honest with yourself about your product and your views is probably my number one, because my engineers helped me with that. In the beginning, I had this thing in my mind, exactly what I was going to do, and by golly, how I was going to do it. And, okay, now you know more about me. But, you know, at a certain point, I mean, I did. I wanted it to be green, and I wanted it to be textured, and I wanted it to match everybody's house, and, you know, blah. I mean, just, I could go on and on. And as I went through the process, and I got down to the real meat of what is it that I'm really trying to provide here? What do I need? What will other people need? It came down to the function, and it came down to the materials, and it came down to how much can we protect and what can we do with this material. So we made changes. That's why there were 24 revisions. You know, some were my ideas, some were guided by the engineers and people in the business world that have said, you know, I know you love that little loop-de-doo thing there, but really it's not going to fly. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? So, you know, be willing to love your product, but also listen to other people and make sure there's a market for it, because I'll tell you, it's difficult to look at something that you trust so much and then think that maybe somebody else wouldn't, you know, be able to use it or wouldn't provide a service for them. And so when I hear that, listening to the other inventors, and, you know, there's some really cool gadget thingy deals, but, you know, a Christmas tree that can also mow your lawn. I mean, you know, whatever.
Right,
and I'm like, well,
right.
That's nice, but it's a mechanical, what? Yeah, so probably be honest. Make sure, because when you start investing your time, your money, you start looking into patents, you start looking into who do I work with, who are my associates, what am I, you know, how do I take this forward? You guys are right when you said this, you know, it's not easy and it does take a huge amount of time and an investment. You know, is it something that if you can invest in yourself, will investors be interested in it? Do all that stuff before you know, go, this is the best thing in the world ever and it's just going to work no matter what. So really being honest with yourself and your product. And if it is all that and you want to move ahead and make the decision kind of ahead of time, do you want to be an entrepreneur? Do you want to be an inventor? Do you want to be both? Do you, you know, because you can license products and have people make them, you know, and you get, they call it mailbox money, you know. You're not, you don't have to do the production and figure out what ASNs are and all that stuff. Other people already know. So those are options. And then your product or service or whatever it is gets to help other people, and you don't have to, you know, go through the ditches as much to learn it. Those two things, I think are really important.
Now, I'm going to take off on that question and ask, because I think we covered this last time, but you and your family, you know, took a lot of personal risk to kind of put out this product. And can you talk just a moment about, you know, what kind of process you and your family had to sit down and go through to say, you know, I have this great idea and everything else, let's invest our money and roll the dice, or, you know, compared to, hey, we got a great idea. Let's find someone to license this to and just go ahead and hand it off to someone else.
Sure. You know, it always starts around the kitchen table or, you know, around the kitchen stove or whatever you're doing. And the first meeting with the engineers really did help a lot because, you know, it was good to see their questions in their eyes. And for a second, I'm like, they're right, I am crazy. But then I'm like, no, they just don't understand. So we'll work further on that. After you get to a point where you know you have a good idea now, you know, even other people are supporting you and said, wow, why didn't I think of that or something. If you want to move forward and license it, or if you want to move forward and make it a business, first thing you want to do is check and make sure, you know, do a patent search, hire someone to do it is probably the safest. I mean, you can do it online and things like that, but I've heard so many stories about that one that somebody missed and they went through all the expense and then there's prior art and you're out of the water. So if it's something patentable, check that. And I think it's like $120 you can get a provisional patent, and that will cover you for a year that says, hey, you have this idea, you have a certain amount of art that you supply for it. And then you decide from there. It's protected for a year, and you can go forward with utility patents and things like that. And, of course, I'm not a patent attorney or by any means an expert at all. These are just things that you kind of pick up as you're going. And I do recommend getting legal advice on that because I'm not it. But then you really have to decide when you're sitting there, you know, with your family and your cat in your lap and your garden growing, do I want to be the one to spend all the time doing this? It will change your life if you decide to move forward with a product. It just has to. You know, unless you're in the same industry or if you've done this before, then you have things under your belt that, you know, that will help you and you already know what you're getting into. But there are surprises around every corner for me every day. I still go, wow, okay, how am I going to do that? And it is a huge decision. You know, you do have to decide about the financing, about the time, how's it going to affect when you're with your family, what you can do. I haven't been out hunting rocks for several months now, and I hate to admit that. But, and then there's an initial investment in your time and income, and then, you know, it changes from there. Now what are you going to do? Are you going to build your product line? You know, where do you want to go with that? Can someone else serve others better with my product? So there are a lot of questions you need to ask before you decide to dig in and move one way or the other. You know, licensing looks like an awesome adventure. I've read a lot of stories, and it's fun to see how people have made their decisions and how they've moved forward. And when you get into it even more and more, you know, maybe your decisions change. Maybe you say, hey, wow, that was really fun, and now I think I should look at, you know, moving my business to somewhere else where I can get more help. Or, you know, there's just so many avenues to go. There are so many ways to make it work, and it doesn't always work. And you have to realize that, too. I still know that. I mean, it doesn't matter if I get this product in every whatever store across the United States. If the people don't want a jar box, then that isn't going to happen next year, you know.
Right.
So, and that's a reality in any business. So It is a risk, and it is a commitment, and there's never 100% as far as I'm concerned, in my very humble opinion.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the resources that you might have used to get where you're at now? What are some of the resources that people might be able to, like, look up online to learn some more information about this process or any of that stuff? Do any of those come to mind to you?
You know, there's so much online, and I am so nervous about just taking things offline. You know, I'm like a personal relationship. I want a referral from someone that's worked with someone that's already knows their motivations. It is, you know, there are a lot of things online that you can learn from the Small Business Administration and things like that are, you know, generalized, help you with your business plan, which you need to have. There are patent attorneys. I can refer one if anybody wants to email me. You know, there are people. Be careful, though. I would really be careful that, you know, there are so many companies out there that are good, and there are so many that may not be as good. And I haven't worked with anyone online, so I wouldn't have a recommendation to say, hey, go to suchandsuch.com. Probably because of my own insecurities of making sure that I'm working with somebody that I know has a proven record, that I know I can see their business, I can see what they've done. So unfortunately, I wish there was a everything.com and it was all right, but there isn't.
Oh, no, I agree. That's partly why I asked the questions, because I've looked online on some of this stuff too, and and I've found some conflicting information. But anyway, you know, it is Christmas time now, and so have you seen any cool ideas that people have been using the jar boxes for as far as like Christmas gifts?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's talk about humbling. People are giving Christmas presents, you know, jar boxes as Christmas presents, and to me, I think about the Christmas present. You know, I try to figure out what they want or what they need or what would be cool, and just for someone to be, I'll see an order come through on my website, and, you know, it's purchased by one person and sent to another. Things like that. I had a lady get a hold of me that wanted to purchase some jar boxes. She just wanted to talk to me, and I loved it. And she said, well, I'm ordering this amount of jar boxes, and they're for presents. And I was just speechless, just like that. Just like that. Because it's just amazing to me. I'm just happy to be able to do that. But there, people are, you know, I hear stories all the time, and like I said, I love them, and I want more, so anybody listening. I had a lady tell me, you know, she's one of the people that's buying them for her RV, and she's buying, you know, four at a time. She wants 16, and I know it's huge to convert all your stuff to jar boxes, and so people will do one or two at a time with their monthly budget or for Christmas or their birthday or whatever. So she's doing them four at a time, and she'll send me an email every once in a while. And she said, you know, she was thinking about it the other day, and it's not just that it's her jars, but she has some that even used to be grandma's and her mother's, so it's sentimental to her. Those types of things. I had a fellow that you are familiar, let's see, Thrive. It's one of the food products I've seen. Okay. So I had one of a fellow that uses that product, and he sent me an email saying, hey, I brought our jar boxes with us. We were gone for a 3-week road trip. We went camping, skiing, up and down stairs, and they had Thrive in their jar boxes, and that's what they thrived on. So, you know, stories like that. People are putting their dry goods in them. People are putting decorations in them. People are putting yarn and all kinds of things. I had a fellow and his wife that live on a sailboat, and they're waiting for the pint because they live on a sailboat, and they said this is a perfect answer to their storage needs. I've had some
that's cool
sort of strange, you know, which, you know, like I think my top two that kind of took me off guard anyway. I mean, it's not really strange, but it's something I wasn't ready to hear, like, in my normal, like, everyday.
Yeah, let's hear those.
Yeah, there's a fellow that makes moonshine.
Nice.
And he just wanted to call and thank me because not only does the RV from back wherever he was to the other place, not to give away where he makes his moonshine. But
can you email me his address afterwards here?
I know, right?
Let's do a road trip here, Bubba.
I mean, you got to try this stuff, I guess, from what he says. I've never personally tried it. I'm like, well, that is very neat.
Well, you know, when the law's chasing you and that moonshine's dancing around the back of your truck, you don't want it to be breaking. So.
Exactly. Hey, wait a minute. That voice sounded familiar. No. And then it's a thing I never thought of, and it's a fellow that he works for either a county or state or some sort of some way. He was gathering samples of cow manure, and not solid cow manure, because there was some sort of a breakout in a feedlot where they had to go take samples of the stuff. And, you know, they just wanted to let me know how handy the jar boxes were to keep the jar from cleaning.
Well, you're like, you could have kept that to yourself.
Yeah, I was
just going, well, that's wonderful.
That's a testimonial.
And in my mind, I'm picturing this whole event. I mean, they have to spread it out. And, you know, well, I could tell you the whole story, but... Yeah, I'm always getting new ideas, and I never would have thought of that. My goodness, no. But
I'll tell you what, Jerry, I don't think there's much of a market there.
Hey, you never know how many people are collecting manure. Now cut it out.
All right.
Have you ever watched the Dukes of Hazzard, the newest Dukes of Hazzard movie?
No.
It was out a couple of years ago. It is so funny. You got to watch it just for this one part. But this one part, Bo and Luke Duke have a bet that he can't get across town and deliver the moonshine in time without breaking a jar. And he's jumping,
no.
And he's flying through things, and he's going, you know, crazy, you know, and you think he's going to bust a jar. Anyway, they get there, and he doesn't bust not one jar, right? So so he thinks he wins the bet. And as he picks up the box of jars out of the trunk of the General Lee, they break through the bottom and bust on the ground.
Oh, no. I could completely see that. I can't imagine the dogs running up and drinking it, but, you know, same kind of episode I had. No, I have to tell you this one thing. It's really funny, I think, anyway. When I was doing the interview for the Backwoods Home magazine, you know, we did it online, and I'd call every once in a while, and I just get so nervous about this stuff. And I says, well, you know, here's the first copy, and she sent it back, and she says, oh, don't worry, you know, we'll let you read through it we'll let you read through your immortal words before we print them. And for some reason, when I was reading that, I thought it said immoral words. And I panicked. I was like, what did I say wrong? I was like, oh, my gosh. And so I sent it to my mom, and I sent it to my daughter. I'm like, do you see anything in here that could be innuendo? And then I read it again, and I'm like, never mind.
That's so funny.
It was one of my favorite. You know, you get these little fun things. It's all fun. It's all hard. And sometimes just getting to hold on to those cute, you know, like, okay, that was fun.
Well, let me, before I ask you, because I want to find out where, you know, we got to get going here in a second. But we want to let people know where they can get jar boxes. I have a question to ask, speaking of funny and kind of cute sort of things. Do you still end up work with, you had a young lady that worked with you in Arlington, Texas. And
yes.
And this, she was the most unusual choice for a salesperson that you would ever think. And kind of give you guys a little bit of a visual here. She's probably early 20s. And, she came in, and we're a Self-Reliance Expo, so you got a ton of conservative people, right? And so you would think that when you brought somebody in to help with sales that they'd be a very conservative looking girl. And she comes in, and she's got she had a piercing, right? She had a nose ring.
Uh-huh.
And dark black hair and everything else. And she had so much attitude. It was funny. And not a bad attitude. It's she'd walk in, and she knew that every customer that was going to walk up to that desk, she was going to sell. And she had no fear to sit there and say, and how many of these do you want?
And, that's right.
And she was a dynamo. And you said you met her at like a training seminar or something. Isn't that correct?
She's my daughter.
Oh, she is your daughter.
Yes.
Oh.
She is
See,
my daughter.
Go on and on about that one. See, I knew that.
I'm like, what else do you want to say there?
Well, you tell her. I thought she was fantastic. I mean, I was laughing the entire time. She gave me such a hard time. I must have watched her a dozen times, and when I'd point out to other booths, and I'd go, see, that's how you sell.
She is fantastic. And you know what? She, on the same note, she has no fear. She loves the product, obviously, and she's kind of fond of the, you know, inventor. But we took her with us to one of our seminars. We, you know, coming out of a completely different background into having a, they call it a widget, you know, I don't care if it's a box or a, you know, whatever, it's a widget in this world. And so you have this widget, which is the plastic thing that you're going to promote or sell or talk about. So we went to a couple of seminars to learn, you know, what's the process here? How does this work? And she went with us, and there was this huge class full of all these professionals and people with ideas and products, and, you know, and they'd go around the room and say, you know, here's the situation. You just are in a meeting with, you know, Mr. Smith, the top executive of such and such, and so, and here's what he said to you. So what's your reply back? You know, those kinds of exercises. And so it came to my daughter, and they said, okay, you know, Miss, here's your example. You're here. The executive likes your product. This is what's happened so far. You know, what's your next comment to them? And she pushes the paper across the table and gives them a pen and says, sign here.
That's awesome.
Just sign here. Everybody else was like, well, where would you like to see this in your market? And we really appreciate it. And she just says, sign here.
So tell your daughter. She knows how fond I was of her because I joke around with her all the time. But, I mean, to this day, I still use her as an example when I'm talking to different people. And people go, oh, it's so difficult. And I said, we had this young girl, and I give the, I kind of go through the whole thing I just did, and said, and she was not afraid to ask for the sale, and I go, and she did fantastic. And I go, if someone can walk in to an environment that's counterintuitive to where they look like they could belong and mm-hmm. can do that well, then it's completely a mental game.
Well, I am a proud mom. Thank you. And I will definitely pass that along to her.
I knew it was your daughter, but and I didn't know where he was going with that. I was just gonna let it. I was gonna let Obama dig himself a hole there. I was like, I was
oh come on! It wouldn't be the first time. It seems like Jerry's hung up on me once or twice, so that wouldn't be the first time. So come on.
You're like, oh, click, click. What was that noise? Click, click.
Exactly.
Are you there?
Well, then tell her that I gave that example, and she did, and you guys both did. I mean, considering you guys had never done that before, you walked in, again, very confident but very humble, and I think it not only does that help, but the product sells itself, and it's been a great example for the Self-Reliance Expo for Colorado Ron and I to show that, you know, if you have the energy and you believe in what you're doing, then you can definitely make a difference out of it.
You can, and I really appreciate that, you guys. You know, there are a lot of questions, but there are people that can help you. I mean, look what you've done for us. I mean, it's just been amazing. People still mention, hey, you went to the – I get it all the time. Your expos, not only do people have a blast, they've learned so much, and they remember it. And they remember, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, and we saw so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. And, I mean, they're just such a huge service for people. I hope your listeners attend them. Vendors that have something that they want to share. It's just been a just wonderful venue for us. I've enjoyed it completely, and so has my daughter. And the tall, handsome guy was my husband.
No, that's right. And he was great, too. We talked hunting for quite a while.
So, well, we got to go ahead and get going here, but take a minute and let us know if people want to buy the jar box for themselves or for Christmas for someone else, where can they get the jar box?
Yeah, that. Thank you for asking that, because I really could not do this without the retailers. I can't. I send people. I have them on my website. My prices are probably higher there. I'm just, like I said, I'm small. I can't buy boxes in bulk. I can't, you know, the shipping costs me more. And I have it there for convenience, and I love it when people purchase them from me and write me notes. But some of my retailers have better deals, and I'll tell them that, you know, it's not about me making, you know, the extra dollar or whatever, and I hope people know that. And I have some wonderful retailers. You know, My Patriot Supply, they carry them and do a wonderful job. Kitchen Crafts, which is like Lehman's and places like that, they have them. And I know that a few of these people even have them in bulk prices, which a lot of people buy bulk. I rarely have somebody buy one, you know, so if they're looking for, if they need to replace a lot at one time. Let me look here. Pantry Paratus, wonderful people, and I know that they have a sliding scale on their fees. Disaster Stuff, Bob, he does a great job at supplying. And these people are all online. I think a couple of them even have a small storefront. I know Disaster Stuff does. Survival Center, they have a store, and it's Get Ready Portland. And they brought them in for earthquake awareness in that area specifically, you know, in addition to the other obvious, you know, it's not cardboard and it stacks and all those things. Their concerns are earthquakes, so they brought them in to serve their customers in that way. I have a brand new one, and they're called Fillmore Container. They just joined with me a couple of weeks ago. And they actually got a hold of me today, and I told them, hey, I'm going to be on the radio. Do you guys want to order, offer any specials for Christmas? And a lot of people are, but it's hard for me to know, you know, to see what everybody is. So check them. I mean, they're on my website under Find a Retailer, or you can Google it, things like that, or your favorite. And if they don't have jar boxes, maybe mention it. But I have free shipping on my website if you order three or more, so it's free shipping, so that's kind of a special I'm running. But Fillmore Container has bulk pricing as well, and if you go on their website, there's a place somewhere as you're ordering, I don't know exactly where it is, they just sent me this email, you can get 20% off your shipping in addition to their bulk pricing. Now, what you have to do, and I'm going to put this on Facebook. I'm trying to learn how to do that better, you guys. Bear with me. Pinterest and all that stuff. I'm just going, oh, I haven't been on there for like a month. People probably think I'm just the worst, but I'm trying. So if you are at Fillmore Container, they're back in Pennsylvania, very nice people, and if you do decide to order from them, if you put Jarbox, just J-A-R-B-O-X 20-20, Jarbox 20, all one word, wherever it is, where it prompts you to do that in your order, you'll get 20% off your shipping in addition to their bulk pricing. So I do know that a lot of these guys are offering new
What's their website again?
Here, I'll go through them right now.
Fillmore Container. I don't have my computer here, but back in Pennsylvania. They also have jars and, you know, supplies for canners. They're not so much a preparedness other than canning and candles and really, you know, jars. And they saw our product and said, we think it'd be a good fit, and I thanked them. So Now coming up next year, that's when we're going to be available to True Value. Kroger, I say Kroger lightly because Kroger is a big name that has a lot of banners underneath it, a lot of people they work with. Super Value is the same thing. IFA, places like that. Menards, I just talked to them. We'll be solidifying things in January. Mid-States, so your places that are your rural, like IFA and places like that. Weiss Markets. We have a lot of those people that will have them available in their warehousing. So look for them, ask for them if you don't mind. That helps me out a lot. I just never know from area to area where people are, where do they get their canning supplies. And I have a few people that will tell me I get them here and there. But, you know, you just don't know from region to region what the best store is. I've heard stores I didn't even know existed. They're like, do you have them at such and such? I'm like, wow, what's that? You know, Southern California. I don't know. I hate to ask, but I will anyway. If anyone out there is listening and would like to, you know, send me an email, make a recommendation. There's a contact form on the website that you can fill. It's real easy. It comes directly to me or my email address, Jerry, J-E-R-I, at jarbox.com. You know, give me your recommendations. I'm here to serve you, and it really helps me to hear from you.
Okay, good to go. Let me run through these real quick. Fillmore Containers is Fillmore, FillmoreContainers.com, FillmoreContainers.com.
Two L's.
Right. And then Pantry Paratus, our old friends over there, it's PantryParatus.com, Pantry Paratus. And then the other ones that she mentioned, our good friend Matt at MyPatriotSupply.com. If you guys listen to Glenn Beck or watch Glenn Beck TV, he's all over that thing. But that's MyPatriotSupply.com. It's MyPatriotSupply.com. And then disaster stuff is www.disasterstuff.com. So that's a lot of places to go check this out. And I just gone through them. There are some really good specials up there. The bulk buys look fantastic. So
great.
Check them out for Christmas. Well, Jerry, always great talking to you. Thank you very much for taking the time with us. And I hope we see you at the first event in Arlington next year.
Hey, you know what? I just got the information on that, and we are working on planning it out. In fact, I'm going to meet up with Matt from My Patriot Supply here in a week or so, and we're going to map out some events. So we're really looking forward to it. I appreciate you guys so much for helping me get the word out and for supporting us the way you do. It's really important to us, and we appreciate it very much. If anyone has any questions, they're welcome to contact me. Let me know, and I'd be happy to help.
All right. Well, tell Matt Merry Christmas and Merry Christmas to you, your husband, and your daughter. And we hope to talk to you again real soon.
Great. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Take care.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Athletic Grind Protector Inventor.
Mr. Athletic Grind Protector.
People love to play sports, but they don't love it when they get hit in the twig and berries.
Oh!
For years, cringing fans watched as man after man went down. But then you came along and said, here, stick this in your pants.
I'm nice to meet you.
The errant headbutt, the inside fastball, the wayward high five, all no match for your crash helmet.
I'll bring it on!
Sure, some athletes shun them, but don't worry, they'll come around.
Show us the way.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light protector of the package and know that we're just nuts about you. Bud Light Beer at Isaac Woodsport, Collins, Colorado.
All right, we're back with Self-Reliance Exposed in Colorado, Ron and Bubba Da Vinci, and we're wearing our brain protector.
That's right. That man's my hero.
He was a man of genius. I mean, that's, man, I'm telling you, I'm glad that I have like 50 of these things because where they came up with it. And the bigger thing is how the guy can get those statements out, you know, in that song. I mean, some of those things, it's like, I can't even repeat it. It's so difficult, you know.
Oh, I know. They're so funny.
I really enjoy them. So anyway, good show today. Good conversation with James Cash. I mean, he is a very, very cool and interesting kid.
He is. He's a great kid.
And I hope that we get a chance to talk to him a little bit more. I think he's going to make a good addition, you know, to the show if we can get him on a regular basis to talk about the biddies.
Yes.
And
brooding biddies.
Brooding biddies. Well, I think we should try to get him on with Jackie. Number one. But number two is we should try to talk to him and give him some prep work and have him talk about rabbits since you guys hit it off so much with the rabbit conversation.
Yeah.
So I think that will be good. And then number two is, it's kind of funny. Every time we say we're going to call Jerry up, we plan on a 20-minute conversation. We end up talking to her for an hour. So,
did it go that long?
Yeah. Oh, it's 54 minutes with that woman.
Oh, it's... She's wonderful.
Yeah, she is wonderful. And, you know, and I didn't completely put, even though I didn't know it, I didn't completely put my foot in my mouth talking about her daughter.
I was waiting, man. I was waiting.
Yeah, that's dangerous territory, my friend. I'm glad I didn't do anything. That's all right. We're a PG show here. So. All right. Well, I think that's it for the day. I guess we'll talk right before Christmas. Our next show will be just a couple of days before Christmas. And, I guess I better get some shopping done, huh?
You better get to work, man.
That's it. All right. Well, I think that's it for the week. Like always, guys, you can check out our websites. www.backwoodshome.com will get you to Backwoods Home. Why don't you give them our web address for Self-Reliance Expo?
It's self-reliance-expo.com.
All right. And for our Facebook page, you can go to Backwoods Home Mag. Of course, this is all after Facebook / and check out what's going on with Backwoods Home. And Self-Reliance Expo, Bubba Da Vinci, and yours is?
Colorado Ron Page.
Colorado Ron Page. All right, guys, you guys have a good, safe weekend, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Take care.
All right, take care, guys.
California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.